Michelle Lim joins me. She's a senior lecturer in clinical psychology and scientific chair of the Australian Coalition to End Loneliness. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you.
Is this part of your role, ending loneliness, by visiting strange men in radio studios around the country?
One of the many things I have to do as chair.
How lonely are we as a society?
Well, our first look into the extension of loneliness in Australia is that at least one in four of us actually have some problematic levels of loneliness.
Can you define that problematic level?
So it's way above the population mean. In statistical language, it's much, much higher than your average. So we were quite conservative in the way we actually code what's problematic versus what's not.
So what does that mean for a person, though? If I've got a problematic level of loneliness, how often am I, is it the quality of my interactions that we're talking about, or the quantity?
It is very much focused on the quality. So when we ask about loneliness, it's not just asking, do you feel lonely?
Yeah.
We also ask it in ways like, do you feel in tune with other people? Do you feel like companionship? Do you feel like someone's supporting you? Those kinds of questions. It's not as simple as just one question, because we do know that some people are really reluctant to just say, I feel lonely. They're very reluctant to kind of say those things because of stigma. There's some form of fragility that comes with the word lonely.
It's possibly a strange association for us to make for ourselves. I mean, we all live in a populated world. We see people, we have interactions with people, but not many of them have the sort of depth which offers some sort of companionship.
And that's correct. And the deep relationships that people desire, and that's why they're expressing this subjective sense of loneliness. And really, there's another group of people who say, I'm not lonely and I'd rather not be around people. We're not talking about that group of people. We're talking about the people who desire that deep connection.
Loneliness as a collective experience, that's a really interesting new idea.
This is a question that I think most people ask. Are we getting lonelier, for example? And we don't have that kind of research yet available. But what we do know is that people are changing the way we communicate, right? And it is changing very rapidly. And people tend to blame social media. You know, we kind of go, oh, you know, it's because of social media. But it's really about the way we use these tools that actually will affect how we feel in society in general.
This loneliness issue, though, can't purely be about the chasms caused by technology. There must be other factors as well.
There's a lot of hypotheses out there about why that's the case, and you know, including things like, you know, poverty or the time we spend actually traveling to work. It takes us away from our communities. You know, we are also moving from country to country to get work experience, and so we don't really stay in one place for a very long time.
It feels sometimes like we're in a moment of great social transition, where a lot of our established human relationships and the elements of our humanity are very unsettled, and we haven't quite worked out new ways of being within that.
And I think that's a problem, because we do know that loneliness is bad for health, because it's actually seen almost or treated as a social pain.
Well, tell us about that. I mean, the ways in which loneliness manifests in physical and mental health.
So we do know, for example, loneliness in, I guess, neuroimaging studies, and where we, you know, researchers scan the brain, that's actually a social stress. So we can actually see that part of the brain lighting up, for example. And it shares very similar pathways to physical pain. So when your brain's processing stress, kind of sends these stress signals to your body, and your body then also has, you have poorer physical health.
Wow.
And so in this particular study, we know that people who are more lonely have not just poorer physical health, it things like headaches and poor sleep, stomach problems. So there's a bit of a pathway from your brain to your body. You know, it's not just mental health, it's also physical health. And this is very apparent as well in other studies that found that feeling lonely actually increases your chance of an earlier death by 26%, not any different to actually being physically alone.
These are remarkable figures.
Yes.
And unsettling. I mean, that's...
It is unsettling.
It's not a good world that creates this.
Well, loneliness is an age-old problem, right?
Yeah,
so we've always had loneliness because it's baked into our DNA. You know, we are meant to feel this way, and we are meant to use it as a signal to connect. But somehow or other, if we're not given permission to feel lonely and to actually be motivated enough to connect, or things aren't as easy for us to connect, then we get stuck in this dynamic.
So these are preliminary outcomes of your research?
This is just the first study. We track people over 3 months. So we actually close that study, I think, next year. And the reason why we do that is because we want to know what kind of things are predicting loneliness over time. Is it that lonely people, they're lonely and therefore they have poorer physical health? Or is it because they already have poor physical health and therefore they're lonely? So okay. We're trying to figure that out. And only when we
find this chicken, find that egg.
Exactly. And that's the only way we would know the answer, not just by asking them at one time point, but by actually moving and along and following them.
Because the great thing, having been equipped with that knowledge, is to then work out, well, what can we do here? Do we need more public spaces where people can gather? Do we need more libraries, perhaps?
Exactly. That's what we're trying to find out. What is the predictor? So if we can remove that predictor, then we can actually really help the lonely person. So the next phase is we will track them again.
Yep.
And then what we do as scientists, we model that data. So we actually look at statistically modeling and actually look at what influences what. And I have done a similar study in the US when I was living there. And what we found, for example, was loneliness was actually predicting more depression, more social anxiety, and more paranoia. Mm. But what was actually predicting loneliness back was a high level of social anxiety. So people who were quite socially anxious were also more lonely at a second time point or a later time point. But that kind of study gives us information about how do we really mitigate loneliness, because we then, if someone is socially anxious and lonely, we have to address two things, not just one. So we've got to be using that data essentially to tell us, again, the chicken and egg story.
Well, it's really important work and tremendous to know that it's going on, and it may in time offer us solutions. And I guess the thing for people listening to us who may be feeling lonely, that the lesson they should take is that they're not alone.
They're not alone at all.
Michelle, thank you.
Thank you.
Michelle Lim is a scientific chair of the Australian Coalition to End Loneliness and head of the Social Health and Wellbeing Laboratory at Swinburne University of Technology.